Gentlemen, welcome. Joe, nice. About time you got a few fat bum and did a bit more work. Yeah. Can you two fill as well?
Listen to Cheers.
I mean, come on, what about this holiday, this lengthy holiday you guys have been having now?
Mm. What do you mean, the touring? The non-stop touring, studio? Actually, we've been in the studio for the last year, basically.
Did it take you a year to make Euphoria?
Yeah.
Best part of.
This is the first thing that went to radio off the new album. This is a track called Promises.
Hello, welcome to Rock and or Roll. I'm your reluctant host, BJ, and here we are. We've made it all the way to Euphoria, Def Leppard's album number 7 for Def Leppard, and hopefully my listeners are still with me. I've really enjoyed doing this. I like to do a series like this where I take a look at a band's career album by album with different guests. So if you're out there listening, let me know if you've enjoyed 2 months of Def Leppard, and if you'd like me to do more series like this in the future, or if you prefer more variety from week to week, I guess. But hopefully people are enjoying it. And so, as you know, I've had a different guest co-host for each of these Def Leppard episodes. And today, joining me is Randy W. Hall from That Dandy Classic Music Hour. Hey, Randy.
Hey, BJ. I'm back in your face.
Yep, we're here to discuss Euphoria, Def Leppard's 7th album, which came out in 1999. And welcome back, Randy. You're lucky I've even allowed you back on the show after your stunning upset victory in the Battle of Podcast All-Stars.
It's funny that you say that, because the show we just completed, which by the time this hits the airwave will be real old, we just did a show on women of the 90s, and I credited the Divas category, and it had a big hand in all of that, so... I had a lot of fun on Rock and or Roll, and I hope out of context people didn't think I was trying to be disrespectful to you and the other fellow, Ryan.
No, there was some comment on Facebook. I mean, it was my idea in the first place to do trash talking, so.
I'm good at that, so.
Yeah.
It's not like it was tough.
No, I thought it would be funny if we did some kind of WWF trash talk, but you turned out to be the only one that was good at it. So,
but at any rate, it's good to talk some turn of the century Def Leppard, because I don't think very many people do.
I've been looking for people to do these different albums, and when I was just listening recently to the Pods and Sods Prince tribute episode, you mentioned Def Leppard as one of your favorites on there.
Yeah, when I was growing up, they were one of my favorites, definitely.
Yeah, then so I wrote to you and asked you if you were into Euphoria. I wasn't even sure if I was going to do a whole episode about Euphoria.
It deserves it. It really does.
Yeah, I think it does. I don't think anything after this does, so I think I'm going to do just one more episode with John Lamoureux, who does a podcast called The Hustle. We're going to do one more episode just about everything else, and then call it a day on Def Leppard.
Call it a wrap.
Yeah.
I'm glad you asked me for Euphoria and not the Sparkle Room episode.
Yeah, exactly. X has got to be the worst, but
yeah, this one actually brought me back to Def Leppard, because I, you know, in the post grunge world, I kind of abandoned them after Adrenalize. Yeah. And then a coworker of mine named David Belo, if I may say his name, I was working at an advertising agency, and we were just talking one day, and he's, you know, Def Leppard came up somehow, and he's like, yeah, have you heard the Euphoria? I'm like, oh, no, man. So he, like, burned me a copy of it that day, and he insisted I listen to it, and I'm glad he did, because I probably would have missed out on a really solid album here.
So what do you have you ever really even listened to Slang then, or?
You know, I went back later and gave it a chance. It was an experimental, a lot more experimental album. And I do enjoy it, but I don't enjoy it as much as any of the other ones I would listen to, like your Pyromania. Obviously.
Yeah, of course.
That Dandy Classic Music Hour, which is what I'm on. We just did Hysteria. We did two episodes on that. So that's where I got into Def Leppard, because I'm 40 years old. So that's when I got on board with the Lep, and I had to go backwards from there.
Yeah, I kind of got on board in between Pyromania and Hysteria. So I can remember when Hysteria first came out, and I was kind of disappointed about it. I did an episode about Hysteria with Joey Haney, and I guess I had a lot of negative things to say about Hysteria, but there's some songs on there that I really love. But then me and Eric Miller did an episode about Adrenalize, which was pretty negative all the way through.
Well, if you listen to my Hysteria episode, I really was so disappointed by Adrenalize. I wanted to like it, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, one of the, you want to like it, and then Let's Get Rocked comes on, and it's all downhill from there. It hurt my heart, BJ. I'll just be honest with you. There's a few good songs on Adrenalize. I like Tear It Down, and I even like Stand Up, Kick Love Into Motion. I think those are two good songs.
Yeah, those are the two best songs for sure. But Tear It Down had already been released as a Hysteria B-side. So, yes, I love Stand Up, Kick Love Into Motion, but otherwise that record is pretty useless.
See, and I haven't heard your show yet, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, Make Love Like a Man. I mean, what the F is that?
Yeah, you said it's Let's Get Rocked and it's all downhill from there, but I think it's all uphill from there, because that's the worst fucking song ever. but it's.
Oh, man.
But yeah, last week I spoke with Pat Francis about Slang, which I like Slang quite a bit. Obviously it's a billion times better than Adrenalize. But yeah, it was, you know, it was their attempt at adapting to the whole alternative rock thing. And Pat Francis actually pointed out that the last song on Slang is called Pearl of Euphoria, which I had never really, that hadn't really connected with me yet. But, you know, it's kind of interesting that that was the last song on Slang, and then the next album would be called Euphoria. But of course, the song Pearl of Euphoria doesn't sound anything like the album that would come to be called Euphoria.
I guess that would make it ironic.
Yeah.
What was interesting about Slang to me was their myopic interpretation of what they thought was out there in the market. And it had some really crazy flourishes of like Indian music in there and Arabic music that were so unlike Def Leppard, but they weren't terrible. So.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. See, the bands from the 80s, when they tried to adapt in the 90s to the alternative thing, they either went one of two ways. They went grunge, or they went artsy with, like, you know, different rhythms, like what you're talking about, Indian rhythms, and just, you know, kind of artsy, fartsy stuff. And plus, obviously, the lyrical themes completely changed. You know, some bands tried to make a grunge record like Kiss, and some bands like Def Leppard and Bon Jovi just kind of tried to adapt their sound, but in a little less obtrusive, like more of a subtle attempt to kind of fit in with the 90s.
Not outright pandering.
Yeah. And I think while I'm not a fan of most of the albums where the bands tried to make a grunge album, I do like Slang and Keep the Faith. I think those are both really good albums. So they did manage to, you know, maintain some of the quality while at the same time trying to pander a little bit to whatever was going on. But
I mean, they were fighting an uphill battle, you know, all these bands, because they were already so established as what they were, and what they were was so passé that unless they went full on Radiohead, OK Computer, I don't know how any of them could have been quote unquote successful. Truly.
No, it just wasn't going to work. You know, they should have just stayed true to what they were and just tried to, you know, battle their way through it instead of trying to change and pretend that they were something they weren't, I guess.
Well, this is my theory on Euphoria, is if for some reason they could have come out with Euphoria instead of Adrenalize, I think they would have had another, you know, like 4 or 5 million seller domestically. Because the songs are there, and it's classic Def Leppard. It's just so passé and out of its time and out of its element by the time it did see light of day, where the musical landscape, you know, you got the Dirty South rap like Master P, you got new metal, you got boy bands and jailbait vixens, and in the world of rock, I mean, it mostly is like indie rock and just like weird post-grunge stuff. And Def Leppard was like really out of step by 1999. So come out in 1991 or two, I think this would have been a really, really big hit for them.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, Adrenalize took, I guess, all of the sappiest, worst aspects of Hysteria and just kind of focused on those. I don't know it. I mean, like I said on the Adrenalize episode, every bit of heavy metal was gone from Adrenalize. There was just no metal left. At least there was still some metal on Hysteria, yeah.
They didn't know what to do once Steve Clark died, I think. I think they were really reeling, and they had to come out with something because time was a-wasting. And they were notorious for long lapses between albums. I think they were tired.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They just had to put something out. They didn't, and also Mutt Lange is only listed as executive producer. So, you know, they made that record in a lot of ways without Steve Clark and Mutt Lange, and I guess it really showed. The album only sold 3 million copies, which, I mean, that is a lot in that time period for a band like Def Leppard, considering that the album that Adrenalize replaced at number one on Billboard was Nevermind. So they were already, they put that album out right in the middle of the alternative rock revolution. But, you know, I think the next Def Leppard album was kind of guaranteed to sell that much out of the gate.
Yeah.
So it really just tanked after just the initial, the fans that were still holdovers bought it. And then it, you know, they didn't gain any new fans.
That'd be us.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I ran out to Target the day it came out, and I got that and Bruce Springsteen's Human Touch on the same day.
Yeah.
And I just remember putting it in my Walkman, and just like the first time I listened to it, I was like, do I really not like this? I've waited all this time, and I don't like this? It was just so disorienting. I would listen to that album for the next year, you know, every now and again, every month or so, put it in. And again, only two songs ever came out of that whole thing that I gave a crap about. And then what this album we're talking about here, like on 13 songs, I would say I legitimately like 10 of them, if not 11 of them. So, I mean, that's a hell of a lot better hit ratio.
Yeah, yeah. Euphoria is a billion times better than Adrenalize, that's for sure.
I mean, it's kind of crazy to me.
But I guess what led to Slang is, you know, Adrenalize is sold 3 million, but it was following up two straight diamond records, you know?
Yeah.
And so obviously it was a failure in those terms. And so they decided to do the Slang thing, and that didn't work at all. That album barely went gold, and it was pretty much completely ignored.
Yeah.
So what Pat Francis said on the Slang episode is, they made this statement or whatever with Slang, and they made some compromises, and they tried in a lot of ways, and some of it worked, but, you know, the music fans just didn't agree and ignored it. So basically they said, okay, you didn't like Slang. Well, here's a rock album with a title that ends in IA, you know, that's basically, so Euphoria is just like a complete like disavowal of Slang. It's like, let's pretend Slang never happened. You know, here's the album that, it's almost like, let's pretend Adrenalize and Slang never happened, and here's the album that should have been after Hysteria.
It kind of reminds me like when Metallica came out with Death Magnetic, And also Van Halen disavowed Van Halen 3 with Gary Cherone. Kind of got the markings of that kind of ordeal to me.
Yeah, it's really stark that they just, you know, they just completely abandoned everything they tried on Sling and just put out an album with an IA title. It's really...
I think they wanted people to care about them again, and who can blame them? I mean, if you got that much approval throughout the 1980s, it's gotta suck to just be completely relegated to just irrelevancy in the 1990s. Gotta be, you know, can you imagine being that, you know, loved, and then all of a sudden people don't even want to shake your hand because you're like a pariah, and it's not even your fault. So I can't blame them for wanting to reconnect with what made them successful. That's why I'm not hard on this album from that. Because, I mean, a cynic is going to be like, oh, yeah, they're just going back to the formula. And, you know, you could say that and you might be right. But you got to look at it from Def Leppard's point of view. It's like we're tired of being if we're going to be ignored anyway by people who don't like us, we might as well go out with what we like to do. So I think that's kind of where they were in the, you know, 98, 99 when they were making this.
Yeah, well, I think when you make what probably were some reluctant compromises on Slang, and then everybody's just like, who gives a shit about this? Then you're like, well, fuck you then. You know, I mean, I think that's kind of what happened, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, in his book, Julian Gill titled the chapter, he has a book called Leopard Tracks, and his chapter about this album, he titled it Pyrosteria.
Nice. So,
but, you know, there's a major element of pyromania and hysteria missing from this album, and that's Mutt Lange. We still have Pete Woodruff, who produced Slang. He produced this one as well. And Mutt Lange has 3 co-writes on the record, but that's it. Obviously, if they really wanted to make Pyrosteria, they needed Mutt Lange producing it. And I think...
Ideally, yes.
Yeah, and I think it does show a lot on this record. I mean, I think this record could have used some of Mutt Lange's input and maybe with arrangements and some tweaks in the production. I think there definitely are moments on the record where you can hear that Mutt Lange's wasn't there.
Oh, yeah.
But and they were trying to make a Mutt Lange record, but, you know, Mutt Lange wasn't there. So I think you can hear that sometimes. But
he was there on a very limited basis.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the songs I don't like, he's got his hand in front and center.
Yes, the worst song on the record is one that Mutt co-wrote, yeah.
I mean, I know we'll get to that when the time it gets there, but yeah, they consolidate a lot of their strengths, I guess, is the best way I could put it, in several of these songs. And in my notes, when we do the track by track, I guess I'll hit it when the time comes. But overall, I agree with the hypothesis that they were trying to get back to their roots. And it's not a bad idea for them, because by this time they were getting to be a legacy act. And I saw them on this tour. I mean, a lot of these songs are made for partying in an outdoor venue, you know what I mean, with your buddies or in a stadium. And that's fine. I mean, Def Leppard, they were the champs in a certain respect. I mean, they were always going to have a certain crowd as a legacy act. And a lot of these songs feed right into that kind of thing. I think that maybe by then they had realized, you know, I don't think we're ever going to sell 3 million albums anymore. I think that's in the rearview mirror. And they just kind of had fun and embraced what made them Def Leppard and what made them happy.
Yeah, it does sound like they're having fun and being creative, and they're trying really hard on Euphoria. You know, one thing about Adrenalize is it doesn't seem like they tried very hard.
Which is weird for them.
Yeah.
Like when we did our Hysteria episode, one of the things that Dan and I figured was that they were just working so hard. Like they were treating every song, even if it wasn't a great song, they made it the best song it could be every time. And I think they got back to that. And I mean, the guitar work in general on this album, especially on the non-ballads, the guitar work is really good. So
yeah, there is a really good guitar sound.
I would listen to this album because, I mean, I'll be honest, a lot of Joe Elliott's lyrics don't hit home. But, if it sounds good, you're going to put it on. And if you want to feel good when you're cruising down the road, or if you're making a Def Leppard mix, a lot of these songs fit right into any good Def Leppard mix you could come up with.
So the album was recorded over the course of a year from 1998 into 1999, and it debuted at number 11 on Billboard and sold 98,000 copies in the first week. So those are pretty impressive numbers, but the problem is it didn't have any staying power. In the end, it didn't even sell any better than Slang had. So
it's a gold record, baby. Didn't quite get the platinum.
But yeah, you know, like we've said, they definitely seem to be trying to make a more classic-sounding Def Leppard album with this one, and pretty much any of the changes they had made with Slang were completely abandoned, except they kept the producer on, which I read that Joe Elliott and Phil Collin kind of had to lobby the rest of the band to even keep Pete Woodruff on as producer, because I guess, you know, they viewed Slang as pretty much a failure.
Yeah, I mean, commercially, it definitely was, and artistically, it probably was one of those classic cases of certain members of the band were on board with it, and then other members were resistant, and it probably was a tough sell. So I can definitely see why they would want to distance themselves from that whole era, because it was just a bad time to be Def Leppard.
And on the Slang episode, Pat Francis talked about how he thought it was really bad that they got rid of the Def Leppard logo on Slang. And so basically, that's all the album cover of Euphoria is the logo. I mean, that's pretty much it.
It's hilarious, actually. Yeah. If you break it down, you're like, whoa, man, these guys definitely want you to know that they're back in your face.
Yeah, so they went from not using the logo on Slang to making the logo the entire album cover, essentially. All right, so I guess we can just jump right into a track-by-track discussion then of Euphoria. Def Leppard's seventh album came out in 1999, and it kicks off with a song written by Phil, Viv, and Joe called Demolition Man. And I was thinking, you know, in Pour Some Sugar on Me, he says, Demolition Woman, let me be your man, right? And
yeah.
Here in this song, he's saying, baby, I'm your demolition man, so... Is this kind of a callback, you think?
I think that Def Leppard has certain tropes and lyrical themes they like to lean on, and I think it's probably subconscious or subliminal. I don't think it was intentional to do that, but it could have been.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
We'll see. I mean, you'll see throughout. Like, if you're a Def Leppard fan, you'll definitely see a thread that weaves throughout their work throughout the years, except with the exception of maybe Slang, like you had talked about previously. As far as this song goes, I think it's a really strong opener. I do love the guitar that opens up the track, but I did have a question that you might be able to help me with, DJ.
Yeah, what's that?
What the hell is a highbrow cowboy?
Yeah, well... Yeah, is that an oxymoron?
I think that's the definition of an oxymoron right there.
I definitely don't think that it. I don't think that it describes Joe Elliott very well.
Highbrow cowboy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's. I think it's serious. I mean, as far as songs go, it's quintessential Def Leppard to me. Right away, they're just kind of like showing you their cards. They're like, yeah, this is a Def Leppard joint. This is what you sign up for when you want a Def Leppard record.
Yeah, I think it's a great opener, and I think it sounds good except for the drums. The drums are really buried in the mix and sound really fake. You know, this is an upbeat rock song, and it needs some, you know, killer drums. But
some balls.
I've made controversial statements on previous episodes about my thoughts on a rock band having a one-armed drummer, so...
Oh, boy.
Let's just... I think that contributes to the drum sound we're hearing on a lot of this record. There are some songs where the drums sound good, though, so I don't know why they sound like so much shit on this song, but... And this song could really use, like I said, a cool drum sound, which it does not have, but... The verse of the song is awesome. The bridge is probably my favorite part, and it's got a really good chorus, so it's a pretty great song overall.
Even though it has Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipe overtones, I agree. Yeah. Pretty much, I would say that Def Leppard is saying they're here to fuck shit up. That they're your Demolition Man. But when I saw them in concert on this tour, this one did translate well live. So I will say they came out strong. And, I mean, I wouldn't say it's like my favorite song on the album, but it's definitely, it sets the template for what's to follow.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. And yeah, it's definitely set the tone. They're setting the tone right away. So,
amen. See, I think one thing I've always noticed about music is I hear the guitar and I hear the vocals and lyrics. That's where my ear tends to wander to. So the bit of, like, unless the drums are like either really outstanding or really terrible, I usually don't notice drums as much as other, like as a musician would.
It's just, these drums are really buried in the mix and they have that electronic sound. Yeah. So on a song like this, that just kind of stands out to me as unfortunate, but you know, I think, with a lot of this album, this song might have benefited from Mutt Lange sticking his nose in there.
Definitely.
I don't know.
I think you're right on the mark there. I think Mutt Lange would have really beefed it up and got the mix a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah, the mix is probably the problem more than anything. But yeah, this is a great one. And then moving on to the next song, Promises, this would have to be my favorite song on the album. What a great single.
Yeah, should have been a top 10 hit.
I think in 1989, this would have been a hit, but in 1999, not so much.
Are you reading my notes from Wisconsin, BJ?
Do you know that this single did not even crack the top 100? I mean, that's just...
That's
obviously
criminal.
It's through no fault of its own, because they did a great job on this song. And if you're thinking about that pyro-steria thing, I think this song is closer even to Pyromania than Hysteria, especially the verse. The melody on the verse feels like Pyromania to me, then maybe the chorus a little closer to Hysteria, and of course this was co-written by Phil and Mutt Lange, and this is a classic Def Leppard song, definitely.
Exactly.
You know, right.
Amen.
Up there with some of their best work. It's great.
I believe this is one they still play sometimes when they in 2016 now, and they should. Killer chorus. The guitar does seem a little off-center in the solo, so getting back to the mix conversation, but it still cuts through. Even though it seems off-center, it does cut through to me. I really love the guitar solo on this, even though it's pretty short. It's short and sweet, but it's criminal that songs like "Wah" by Disturbed were cracking, you know, the Billboard 100, and you got like Hot Dog Water cracking the Hot 100, and Uncle Cracker's in there somewhere. Can't even, there's no room on the chart for our Promises in 1999.
Yeah, yeah. If they wanted to, you know, come out of the gate with a great single for their album, they did a phenomenal job. And again, maybe it could have been beefed up a little bit, but it's produced pretty damn well, and it's just a great pop single. And yeah, you know, the bridge into the chorus, it's just really catchy and great. So,
well, I've talked about this ad nauseum on my own show, but I used to make a lot of mixtapes. And this is one, like, if I'm going to put latter or mid-period Def Leppard or latter period Def Leppard, this is definitely going to be in the conversation to make a mixtape for me. Because this is classic, like you said. It's classic vintage Def Leppard. I'm not going to say it's my favorite song, but it would be in the top three. I have one that is far and away my favorite on here.
Interesting.
That's coming much later. So, yeah. I think this album in general is bottom heavy, which for Def Leppard was unusual.
Yeah, it is a weird track listing, but these first two songs here are definitely two of my favorites.
They are keepers.
I know exactly what you mean about bottom heavy, for sure. It gets weird in the middle, I guess.
Yep.
Track number three, Back in Your Face.
It's about to get weird.
Right, yeah, here. For me, the production on the verse is just awful for me. It gets a little better, but the chorus is kind of a dud. You know, there's some moments in this song. There's like a another bridge sort of section around the solo area that gets a little better. But overall, I don't really have much desire to ever listen to this song personally. And it's kind of contrived. And I don't, whatever they were going for, I don't think it really works. And I think it's really the production is the biggest problem.
As a man who's a fan of the album art form like you are, you've got to know that usually the third track is one of the strongest. And
yeah, you would hope, yeah.
Yeah, usually if you listen to an album, you know, the third track's one of the pillars of an album. And this one just falls flat on its face. If that's, now, I think this was, like, made to be played live. This is, like, obvious, like, attempt to be a live song. But it's just ham-handed is how it comes across. And you know our friend Craig Smith over there, Pods and Sods, he likes to make fun of Def Leppard on the show. And one of the
yeah.
And one of the things he's always, you know, he's getting in digs on the left. He's always having it. He's always going, hey! And this is like a parody of a Def Leppard song with all the hey. I thought the song was called Hey. You know?
Yeah.
It's all the worst tendencies of over-caffeinated Def Leppard. It's made for those open-air summer concerts, but for listening to music in your car or on your headphones or anything like that, it's not something I'm ever going to go to. And I just don't believe that he is going to scare the pants off the holiest ghost. That is not something I'm buying into, Joe Elliott. It's just obnoxious. I mean, I understand why they put it on the album, but they should have never put this like on side one, let alone the three spot.
Well, yeah, like you said, it sounds like it was written to be played live, but they should have recorded it to sound live, because this recording is just a studio concoction that doesn't hardly even comes across as a band playing it.
Well, I'm so glad the rest of the album didn't go in this direction.
Yeah, they needed a two-arm drummer on this one, I think.
I think they needed to not be so cocky and obnoxious. I think that's another part of the recipe, because they're going for swagger and it just comes off as lame.
Yeah, whatever they were going for, they didn't hit the mark.
Amen. On this one.
So moving on to track four, Goodbye, which was just written by Rick Savage. It's definitely better than Have You Ever Needed Someone So Bad or Two Steps Behind or that shit. I think it's even better than Love Bites, personally, but it's no Hysteria, you know? It's not horrible, but again, I don't have much desire to ever listen to it. It's decent, but it's, you know, it's kind of blah.
Man, you're reading my notes, dude.
I'll have to let you go first sometimes, huh?
Basically, it's in the vein of Two Steps Behind, but I like it better than that one I wrote. In the late 80s, this would have been a top five song for sure. As far as personal feelings about it, I usually give grades to songs. I wasn't going to try your patience like that, but if I had to give it a grade, you know, I'd give it a B. It passes, but I'm not going to seek it out. But it's good for what it is.
Yeah, Two Steps Behind is so contrived and formulaic and just devoid of any honest emotion. So this song, while it's kind of generic, it at least isn't as just kind of insulting to your intelligence as Two Steps Behind. That's what I would say. So
it's a hell of a good point.
And you know, it has a semi-decent melody. Two Steps Behind is like the most paint-by-numbers melody you could possibly imagine. So you know, I mean, this is a far superior song to something like that.
Yeah, like Two Steps Behind actually makes me angry when I hear it.
Yeah, it's just embarrassingly bad. So at least they kind of figured out that they were moving in the wrong direction with their ballads and kind of tried to rein that shit in, because, you know, Have You Ever Needed Someone So Bad too? It's like they were writing the worst examples of just that formulaic bullshit. Moving on to the next song, I think we both already made reference to this one.
Oh man,
am I right that this is the one that we were referring to earlier?
The nadir of the album. I like a woman who loves to drive, loves to do it fast, yeah, above 95.
Yeah, All Night, co-written by Phil and Mutt. So this is one of, I keep saying they needed Mutt Lange, but you know, he didn't help out a whole lot on this one here.
my first note before you steal my point, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
It sounds like a horny teenage boy's interpretation of the Shania Twain song from the time period. That's kind of what, I mean, it's got Mutt Lange all over it. And it's the worst part of Mutt Lange, unfortunately. It's not the good Mutt Lange, you get the shitty Mutt Lange on this one.
Yeah, well, I think if you consider this song in context of slang, then this is just like a complete disavowal of everything they tried with slang. This is like all of the artsiness and modern rock seriousness or whatever they incorporated into slang, this is just like the polar opposite, and it's just horrible. But it's just like spitting in the face of slang, you know? Like,
oh my God. Like this comes on and I just cringe. The lyrics,
yeah, it's awful.
They're grossly inappropriate for a guy Joe Elliott's age, and not, and it's just embarrassing, as I believe you already said. As I believe you already
said. This song makes Adrenalize seem good, so yeah.
But so like when I get to this point in the album, it's touch and go, right? But I would say from this point on, you're pretty well in the clear. Everything from this point on is at least decent.
Yeah, we've definitely hit the low point at least. Yeah, probably the two low points are probably Back in Your Face and All Night. So I guess they've already got the worst songs over with.
We're definitely on the same page as far as that goes. And they did this one when I saw them, And I think that's when I went to either take a piss or get a beer. So that tells you all you need to know about this song, I think.
Yeah, you know, there's 13 songs on this record. They should have just made it 11. And
yeah.
So.
But you know what's crazy is they probably looked at Back in Your Face and this as like opportunities to get the crowd involved. I legitimately believe that. They wrote them for their live show, not for a record per se.
Yeah, it's like even though they obviously for a lot of this record, they tried to make a classic sounding record. They did also kind of load it up with different styles, maybe thinking maybe we could try this as a single. Maybe we could throw this out there as a single. I don't know. It's also kind of a schizophrenic album. At the same time, there's kind of the core songs that are more classic sound, but then they throw in these other songs that really don't fit, but I guess they wanted to keep their options open or something. I don't know.
It'd be interesting to hear the creative process and the thought behind certain decisions that were made. Because wisely, they did not release Back in Your Face or All Night as a single. But why they would put them on side one and key spots on the track order, that is head-scratching to me. If you're going to include them, why put them where they are?
Yeah. Yeah, the sequencing of the album is... doesn't make a lot of sense, but so we get to, what is it, song number
six? Yeah.
Paper Sun. Written by the whole band, I think, and the producer. I think everybody.
It is a group effort. You are correct. I love this song. It's the highlight.
Yeah, it's a highlight, but I don't know. I don't think it's great. It is really good. It was, you know, it was inspired by a terrorist car bombing in Northern Ireland, which
that sounds like a U2 concert or conceit to me.
Yeah, Vivian Campbell's from Ireland, and I think a lot of the guys in Def Leppard were living in Ireland because they were tax exiles after Pyromania. They all moved out of the UK.
Oh, that makes sense.
Ireland kind of became their home base. They did a lot of their recording in Dublin after that too. So this is like a socially conscious song, and obviously, I mean, they even say it was meant to be like an epic sounding song. It's kind of like White Lightning from Adrenalize, but better.
It reminds me a lot, like musically, of the musical approach of Gods of War from Hysteria.
Yeah, it's a very Gods of War song. It's kind of like Billy's Got a Gun type song. Yeah, it's definitely very similar to Gods of War, too. Yeah.
I would say, for me, it just consolidates a lot of the strengths of early and modern Def Leppard. Modern as of 1999, not like 2016. And it seemed, I didn't know about the bombing backstory. It seemed like it was about disillusionment from my amateur interpretation. There's a change in the guitar about halfway through. I really enjoyed that change. Just the guitar work overall on this is excellent.
Yeah, I agree. The guitars sound really good, but once again, I have a problem with the drums on this song. I think the drum sound is pretty terrible.
You and Rick Allen are gonna have some words.
I think it's more Pete Woodruff probably, but I mean on these heavy, you know, Def Leppard metal songs, you need some goddamn, you know, drums on there, not this little click. Shit, you know, electronic sounding shit buried in the mix. So it's just, you know, it's kind of unfortunate, but it is a cool song, and obviously it was like predestined to be a fan favorite, you know.
Good evening. The IUC has said 26 people have now died in this afternoon's bomb in Omagh. 5 of the victims died in hospital. The dead include women and an 18-month-old child. Dozens of injured people were taken to the Tyrone County Hospital in Omagh. The blast occurred at about 3:10. The IUC Chief Constable, Ronnie Flanagan, said he couldn't come to any conclusion other than the warning was deliberately misleading. The area was crowded with shoppers at the time. This attack is the worst atrocity of the Troubles in the North. It's believed that the dissident Republican group calling itself the real IRA planted the bomb. The group, which supports the 32-county Sovereignty Committee, is believed to have less than 100 members.
The massive car bomb in Omagh exploded at 10 past 3 in the heart of the town's busy shopping area at the junction of Drumrah Avenue and Market Street. A telephone warning earlier saying the bomb was at the courthouse 400 yards away meant that many people were evacuated from the courthouse end of the town and inadvertently walked straight into the path of the bomb. People who were on the scene almost immediately described what they saw as a battlefield with bodies lying on the road and in and around the shattered buildings.
Paper Sun, to me, it's just a classic for Def Leppard as far as post-Hysteria. It's got to be one of their high water marks.
Yeah, that's true. So is this your favorite one on the album then? Or?
No.
No.
Okay. No. Oh, I will definitely tell you.
Oh, I bet I know.
you're gonna write it down? But yeah, this would the top three though.
Yeah, it's definitely top five. The next song, It's Only Love. This one, this is another one that's just like, couldn't be more different than Slang.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
It's like a let's pretend Slang never happened song. I wrote down, it's kind of like an Ace of Base song.
Ace of Base. I call this one the na 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 song.
Yeah.
I actually like it. As far as the ballad goes, I like it. I really like the chorus is very singable, and it just seems really soundtracky. Seems like it's ready to go, slip right into one of those teen melodramas of the day. I'm not going to like sit there and play it for a non-Def Leppard fan to convert them, but I think it does what it's supposed to do. And when it comes on, I find myself singing along. It's only love, so why is falling in it the one thing that you can do? It's only love, and why am I hurting from it? It's only love if you're hurting too.
Yeah, maybe if I wasn't judging it as a Def Leppard song, I'd be a little more charitable towards it. If it was an Ace of Base song, maybe I'd be like, yeah, that's all right. But
I would say this is probably like in the middle of the pack as far as songs go, but I like it. You know, if I were grading it, I'd give it like a B+. So. You go straight to my head. Just can't win, I can't stop the state I'm in. It's all.
Well, my first note on the next song is, what a dumb song title. Because it's 21st Century Sha-La-La Girl, which...
It sounds like a T-Rex cast-off title to me.
Yeah, a T-Rex would have been more, because, you know, more tongue-in-cheek, I guess. I don't understand what the sha-la-la part, why is that there? Just get rid of that. Even in the song, the sha-la-la part doesn't need to be there. They don't even really say it in the chorus until, like, the very end, like, when there's no music and it's just Joe. So I don't even know why the sha-la-la part is there. If it doesn't make any sense to me, but And the production on the verse is bad.
To me, I want you, baby, can't you say? I'm crashing, I'm crushing, I'm stuck on you. I do anything that you want me to. I crawl on my knees just to get to you. I close my eyes and girl, it's true. On a psychedelic space machine, galactic sugar high. Like a caffeinated satellite, gone way past 99. Come on, be mine. 21st century girl, all outrage is quite contagious. 21st century babe, you got some love fire. 21st century girl, sweet romance, cosmic dancer. 21st century babe, sha-la-la-la girl.
Yeah, this is not a high water mark for me. It's kind of misguided and doesn't really gel in the end, I don't think. I think it needed some editing, especially that sha-la-la part. So,
I agree with almost everything you said. I would say...
Oh, I stole your notes again.
I would say, I mean, I'm noticing a theme here is all the songs that seem like they made them for crowd participation in concerts, all of those are not produced well on this album. Because this is, I think this is another one they saw as a live vehicle. As for its place on the album, I mean, it's grown on me a little bit. I think when it came out in 99, 2000, when I first heard it, like, I did not like this song. It would be an automatic skip for me back then. But now I can listen to it now and it doesn't bother me. I don't know if that's a compliment or not. You're right on with the lyric. I mean, the title of the song is definitely ill-advised at best. If you have no regard for lyrics, the chorus is catchy. If you're like a 10-year-old, 11-year-old boy, you're an adolescent boy really getting into the song. Because the guitar really is good. I like the pace is hectic. They like get the energy up, which I do appreciate at this point. And the guitar solo is kind of scorching.
So the next song, To Be Alive, this was originally a Vivian Campbell side project he had called Clock.
Oh, really?
He wrote this song for that. He formed that group in L.A. in 1997 with Derek Schulman, Manny Alvarez, P.J. Smith, and Mark Brown. And I have the Clock version, so I'm going to play that right now.
Inside a room, wait for the world to come to you.
So I really like the Clock version, but it's very different from the Def Leppard version. And I probably prefer the Def Leppard version, but I think what I would really prefer would be a version that's kind of somewhere in between the two in styles. I like this song a lot. What do you think of it?
My note is a no shame song for sure.
Yeah.
this seems like it was made for a Dawson's Creek montage. It's another ballad right in the Leopard wheelhouse. This is a top five for me.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites too. I think it has a great melody, great hooks, great chorus. Yeah. And I think it has like an emotional resonance that like Goodbye doesn't really have, you know?
Yeah,
because
I agree.
Goodbye is a little more contrived and this song feels a little more original and inspired. So yeah, this is a strong song in my opinion. I've always liked this song, you know, ever since this album first came out. This song just caught on for me.
It needed to switch probably places with Goodbye in the order.
Oh yeah, I would shake up this track listing big time if I was going to sequence this album. Yeah.
Well, like Hysteria, I think was tracked really well, like the way they did that one. This is like inverse of that. Like they saved a lot of their best for last, which, you know, I guess is their right. But see, I think that's where Mutt Lange would have helped. I think Mutt Lange would have been like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah, right.
You know, this is where this needs to be. This is where that needs to be. It's good to be alive.
So moving on to Disintegrate, again, you know, in a keeping with the idea that they were trying to make a classic sounding Def Leppard album, they include an instrumental. And fittingly, this one gets maybe the best drum sound on the album. So,
well, in the beginning, is that drum and bass in the beginning? Am I like listening to Ronnie Size Represent? I was taken aback in a positive way.
This shows that they could get the drum sound right, or mm-hmm. at least a lot better. So, you know, I don't know what they were doing on some of these other songs, but obviously on an instrumental, they must have known you got to make the drums sound good on a fucking instrumental at least. So,
well, this is a Phil Collins joint, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. And, you know, we talked on the High and Dry episode about how Switch 625 is one of those instrumentals where you don't wish they had. I mean, a lot of times you hear an instrumental and you're like, well, why didn't you just write lyrics for this? But with Switch 625, it's just so melodic on its own, and I think this is another one where you don't really hear where the vocal melody would have been, so it is really cool as an instrumental, and I think it's less than 3 minutes, so it's not, you know, you don't want an instrumental that's really too long, at least I don't, but you know, I think they should have just gone for it and called it Switch 626. I would have liked, that would have been fun if they had just done that, because, you know, they might as well have.
What they needed was you to advise them. the next song, Guilty, that sounds to me like Love and Affection from Hysteria. It's got that same vibe going on. And it's a it's not quite total ballad. It's got a mid-tempo kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like Hysteria.
Mm-hmm. I think Hysteria. I think you're right there. Been radio fodder in 89 or 90. I could see this, you know, breaking through, because, you know, in 89 and 90 you always had songs like this getting into the top 10, top 5.
Yeah, you said earlier that, you know, why the hell did they put Back in Your Face at track 3 on the record? I think this should have been track 3 personally.
It would have been a lot better than that piece of shit.
This is one of my favorites on the album. I think it's really good, not exceptional. But it's really good. But it is right in that Hysteria, Stand Up, Kick Love Into Motion type sound and style and everything. But you know, it's really good. It's a really good song. I really like it.
Like, the part that gets me is when he goes, you know, when the "If you need faith, if you need love," and then Joe's like going, "Hey," you know, that part really hits home with me.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like you've heard it before, but it's so damn good that even though it's almost like just rewriting maybe Hysteria or, like you said, Love and Affection, it's really well done, you know, and they're good at it, obviously, so.
Well, now that you say Hysteria, it's like they took the best elements of Love and Affection and Hysteria, and they did it through that kind of filter, and because you can, you know, kind of borrow from yourself and reinterpret yourself into a really good way. And I think that's exactly what happened here.
Yeah, I mean, I just love Hysteria. So if Def Leppard are going to try to write another song like Hysteria, I'm kind of going to be a sucker for that. So.
So now, getting into the next one, the next one is my favorite song.
Okay.
You know me, just look in my eyes. I shed my skin, got a new disguise. My heart still beats, and I'm still the same. Do you know my name? It's everything you've ever seen. It's every dream you've broken. It's only when you keep your eyes wide open. Like a circle of light, spinning out of control. And I just can't let go.
Day After Day, it's a the rare Def Leppard song that makes you think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be insulting, but Def Leppard is ideal for partying and just driving down the road and having a good time. But Day After Day is the kind of song like that. I'll catch myself singing it to myself and like thinking about the message of the song, which I can't think of hardly any Def Leppard song that I do that to. To me, like, I just love the whole vibe of it. And, you know, it's haunting when he goes, "Don't you know my name?" And he's got good lyrics in this song for a change. And the guitar work, good God, great guitar work again. The solo is banging. And the bass at certain points even sounds like a heartbeat. It's just a Def Leppard song that kind of like haunts me in a good way.
Yeah, what they do here is they take the two heaviest songs and probably two of the coolest songs and just tack them onto the end of the record. And it really doesn't make any sense.
No.
Yeah, and these both of these songs have a much better drum sound, which I keep talking about.
It's the most mature Def Leppard has ever sounded.
It's got a great build. The chorus doesn't quite connect for me. It's not. I don't think it's a great chorus, but it's a cool song. It's really weird. It's like, it's almost like they had one idea for the album and then they changed their mind and then they. So maybe the whole album was going to go more in the direction of songs like these last two, but then they changed their minds or were second-guessing themselves, and then they just end up having these two songs as kind of afterthoughts, but they really stand out at the end here. You're like, holy shit, you know, they're actually making some heavy metal, you know?
Yeah.
But they're just tacked on the end. It's really weird. The whole sequencing of the album seems like they were thinking too much and weren't even sure what the hell record they were actually making.
They were in their head at some point, I guess.
Yeah.
And unless you're a devotee like you and I, you know, you might not even make it this far into the album.
Yeah, right.
It's a damn dirty shame.
Yeah, to think if the, longtime Def Leppard fans didn't even make it to, like, the two heaviest songs on the album, man, it's sad. You have to slog through some of the other shit to get here, but,
like, to me, I know you're not as enamored with it, but it's an A+ to me. I mean, I just really enjoy. I could listen. Like, if I'm going to make a mixtape, I would actually look forward to this being on it.
Yeah.
That's how much I really enjoy it. I don't know if it's my favorite Def Leppard song, but it's in the top 10 of my favorite Def Leppard songs, without a doubt.
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, what kind of an album has this song and All Night on the same record? And it's so. They were kind of confused about what they were doing here, I think. I think they were going in one direction and then they kind of got cold feet and then they kind of mixed it up or something like that.
You got me wanting to see like a monster, like the movie Monster from Metallica. I want to see like the movie version of them making this now. Woodruff, I could like see, I think what might have been happening is because of Woodruff being there instead of Mutt Lange, I think there is a lot of struggling for creative direction. So you get a mishmash. I bet you that's a lot of it.
Yeah, and some of the guys didn't really want to be working with Woodruff again. And, you know, one thing I read is that at first they were thinking about trying to get Bob Rock to produce it. So, yeah, I think they had a lot of different ideas about what they were going to do and probably a lot of disagreements about which direction. I mean, they're coming off Slang. And so the decision to make an album that just pretends Slang never existed, I don't know if that was an easy decision for them to make. I don't know if it was the obvious choice. I mean, you know, 1999, it was just a difficult time. And I don't know what exactly they were trying to do in the end. I think they had a couple of different things they tried to do. And then it ended up being kind of a mishmash of whatever couple of different kinds of records they might have wanted to make. You know, I would guess there were a couple of guys in the band that wanted to make a whole album that was more like Paper Sun and Day After Day. And then there were a couple of guys in the band that wanted to put shit like Back in Your Face on there.
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe, you know, in the end, Pete Woodruff was kind of the middleman and, you know, put together this album that was kind of schizophrenic at times. But, I mean, the last song, Kings of Oblivion, is, you know, like I said, these are like the two heaviest songs.
See, it sounds like pre-Hysteria Def Leppard to me.
Yeah, this one, again, I don't think it has a killer chorus that would really, like, send it over the top for me.
I think you're right on there.
You know, it's a pretty enjoyable Def Leppard-sounding song, but then it's a little bit disappointing because you just want a little bit more, which I don't know if that would have been Mutt Lange or not, or Steve Clark. You know, maybe that's what's missing from these songs.
But there you go. He was pretty good, Steve Clark.
Yeah.
This to me, is this like Def Leppard warning us to change our ways, DJ?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because when I'm listening to it,
they get heavy and serious on these last two songs. It's just weird that this is how the album ends. And then you're like, wait a minute, why didn't they make the whole record like this? But
I sound like a broken record, but the guitar work is amazing on this particular, like the last two songs, the guitar work is really stellar.
Yeah, that's one thing I would not complain about on this record, especially on the heavier songs, is the guitar sound. The guitars sound really good on this album.
You're a guitarist, and I'm not, but you're a guitarist, and you get off on that kind of thing. I could see this being a big Def Leppard album for you. At least with CDs, you could skip the songs that don't have good guitars. But, yeah. This thing, the flange effect, it's actually effective. Cause I don't like when the fans use a flange because I think it's kind of a gimmick. But I think the flange effect in this song is pretty effective.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. That's what I'd say about these last two songs is, if nothing else, they're cool. And you know, you're like, if you're a Def Leppard fan, you're like, yeah, all right, you know, I'll take this. Conscious rips your mind. Stretch to kiss the burning sky. I watch the waking blue.
You are alluding to something that I think is right, that there's like one ingredient that stops you from being all in on Kings of Oblivion. It's really good, and it's like a dish that tastes really good, but it's not like the best you've ever had. But you're like, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
I think that's the way I would sum up Kings of Oblivion. I would give it like an A- as a grade. I mean, I really enjoy it. I'm not going to cue it up, say, but I definitely do enjoy it when it's playing. The fitting closer as well.
Yeah, it is a good closer, yeah. In mysterious ways, we rise up and we never learn. As we try to shake this sleep that burns, the darkness screams its icy breath. Have you heard the B-sides?
No.
There's a Goodbye single that has, I think, three songs that aren't on the record, but two of them, Burnout and Worlds Collide, they ended up being on the deluxe edition of Slang. So they were kind of leftovers from Slang, I think. And then there's a song called Immortal that sounds more like Euphoria, and it's pretty good. We'll be right back.
I say if you lose Back in Your Face and All Night, you know, you got a really great album here.
Yeah, it would be a strong album without those two. Yeah.
I mean, as it is, it's a good, really good album.
The placement of those on the record are just, it's a big problem.
Mind-boggling.
They really screwed up the sequencing here. But I think it was, I think you're seeing a band that had a lot of disagreements over the direction and just how to, you know, put the whole album together in the end. So I don't, it doesn't come across as a unified record because it wasn't a unified band, probably. That's kind of what I take away from it.
You know, you got me really thinking about that kind of thing. And again, I would love the backstory. I want to hear the backstory of the making of this, because as good as it is, it could have been so much better if they had done some things just a little. Again, ultimately, what does it mean? Because it probably wouldn't have had a place in the commercial stratosphere anyway, musically. But, you know, as Def Leppard fans, you want the best album that you can, you know, you can get. So.
Yeah, when you go from the height of hysteria to the low of slang, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do, I mean, that's not a great position to be in, and it can't be easy for this group of people who, this is their livelihood, this is their whole life, and you know, they have to all come together and figure out what they're going to do next in a time where it must have been really, really hard to figure out what to do. So, I mean, you know, the obvious thing to do would be just make a fucking Def Leppard album and don't think so much, but at the same time, you have to try to sell records and, you know, and keep your career going. So,
exactly. I mean, they don't want to play county fairs yet. I don't think.
Yeah. So, yeah, my final verdict on this record would be I definitely like more than half of it. The real standouts are the first two songs and then To Be Alive and Guilty. Those are probably my four favorites.
I think we're pretty well in lockstep here, except I like Day After Day more, and I think you like Demolition Man a little more, but I mean, we're quibbling at this point, so.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Randy, for joining me for this discussion of Def Leppard's Euphoria.
I feel like I understand Def Leppard and their politics a lot better after hashing this out with you. And it was a lot of fun, BJ.
Yeah, and like I said, next week will be the final episode of Def Leppard. Hopefully people aren't fed up with the Def Leppard talk. Hopefully people are enjoying it.
Can I do a shameless plug?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go for it.
If you want to hear more analysis on Def Leppard, we do a Hysteria episode after you get done listening to BJ's. If you haven't had enough of that, you can go to That Dandy Classic Music Hour on iTunes or Stitcher or any of those popular podcasting places and find us. And our website is thatdandyclassicmusichour.com.
Great. All right. So thanks again, Randy. And we'll have you back on another time. So,
well, my pleasure. And I look forward to, by the time this comes out, our Prince episode will have been done. So if you want to hear BJ on our Prince appreciation episode, check him out there as well.
And now to play us out.
What does that mean? To play us out? I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you with a song called I Am Your Child, which is the bonus track on the Japanese version of Euphoria. And it's a pretty classic sounding Def Leppard song. So here it is. I Am Your Child, Japanese bonus track. Till next time.
be back.